Turning our attention to raising sheep, the wonders of wool, cooking with lamb. And why are we doing that today? Well, it's the annual Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival coming up, actually coming up this Friday through Sunday at the Jefferson County Fairgrounds. And it's sponsored by the Wisconsin Sheep Producers Cooperative. And with us today, Ray Antonovich of the AZ Farms in Oregon, Wisconsin. Farm located 1820 Schuster Road. They offer farm tours. Ray, great to have you back.
Well, thank you. We enjoy being here, and we've got some very interesting speakers or people with us this morning.
We sure do. Clara Mikulay-Yunus is the researcher in animal science in the College of Ag and Life Sciences. And Claire, great to have you along, too.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
And also with us today, Jack Kessner is the executive chef of the Oconomowoc Lake Club and a founding board member of the Slow Food Wisconsin movement in the Southeast. So, Jack, great to have you along, too.
Larry, thanks. Yeah, it's fun to be back. And, yeah, I think all of our names have given you a good tongue twister this morning.
Boy, I tell you what. Yeah, it's not often that I have three guests and then three interesting names, too. You know, I'll be teaching a radio class this afternoon and talking about writing. And often, Ray, I've used your name, your last name, as a reason to use phonetic spellings when you're writing for a radio show.
Well, I heard about that situation back when I was a student here. And, so, fine.
Well, I'm glad to have you guys with us today. Well, you know, we lead the nation in sheep milk production. Largest processor of sheep milk, Sid Cook from Carr Valley Cheese. Claire?
Yeah, that's true. There are right now nine plants making cheese from sheep milk in Wisconsin, and there's probably two more that are going to come on next year. So we process the most sheep milk. We also produce the most sheep milk of any state in the United States. So we're really leading the industry both in sheep milk production, but also the creation of new cheeses, both sheep milk and mixed milk cheeses, which is pretty unique.
As it is very unique. Jack, do you use any of that cheese, sheep cheese, in your cooking?
Yep, and what's a funny story about that is I love using local food, and I think one of the fun things about local food is actually knowing the producer. And I remember Brenda came to the club once, and she was let me taste the fresh cheese, the sheep cheese, which was wonderful. And she asked me what other cheeses I use, and I said, I use this French feta sheep cheese. Could you make it? And then about 2 months, 3 months later, she came down with a sample and said, here you go. And she tweaked it a little bit, but now that's all I use at the club is her sheep's cheddar, sheep's feta.
Oh, that's great. Yep. So another great use of our Wisconsin sheep cheese. That's even hard to say, you know? Sheep cheese. Ray, we've got this Sheep and Wool Festival coming up Friday through Sunday, and it's an opportunity for anybody interested in the sheep industry to get all the latest.
Right. There are so many things going on that we could spend hours just kind of talking about each of them and then just a small presentation on them. And this has been really growing. The Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival is one of the largest in the nation, not only as far as spectators, but of the vendors and the sheep. We've got 700 sheep entered in shows, which is really great. And it has not been proclaimed yet, but I think the Sheep Festival will have probably the largest fleece or wool show in the state.
So an opportunity to come out and see that being done.
Right. And then with the vendors, we have many different products that the people can be exposed to that they probably never thought of as far as the including of wool into these, the fiber area. The fiber is very big as far as the festival is concerned.
Okay.
And then all the activities going on.
So give us an example of some of those things that we might never have thought about relating to wool. I mean, you come up with some for us?
Oh,
Now that I bring it up, maybe I'll let you ponder that for a minute.
Oh, yes.
I'll let you ponder that for a minute while I want to turn to Claire. You research in animal science, and that's sheep a big area for you?
Yeah, I just completed my doctorate here at UW doing some sheep research, and actually my new position is in extension, so I'm the small ruminant extension specialist, so that covers the breadth of sheep and goats and both milk and meat and also fiber. So it includes a number of different types of animals.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And Jack, you've been with us in the past. How long have you been at the Oconomowoc Lake Club?
I've been at the Lake Club for 19 years.
I know, it was a long time.
And I'm just a strong proponent of local food. And I think, when people talk about, fruits and vegetables, I always say is like local food 101 and 102. Mm-hmm. But meats, I think, is 301 and 401. It gets a little more challenging, I think, especially for restaurants to try to, use local meats in restaurants.
But you're able to do it? Do you do a little of it?
Yeah, actually at the club, right last year, about 35% of the food that I purchased was from local farms, which is about $60,000. And when I say local, it means it's straight from the farmer. It's not through
a middle person.
Because to me, that's really part of local food is knowing the farmer. And I think a lot of times the food is kind of like a conduit for rebuilding some of those connections, some of those interactions. And to me, that has become a bigger part of local food is, meeting those people. And like with Brenda, all of a sudden, here she is a farmer trying to figure out what the market wants. But, I think chefs can interact with the farmers, producers, and kind of let them know what we're looking for. And there isn't that middleman to kind of be a buffer where a lot of times I think the middlemen don't want to deal with stuff. So then it kind of gets pushed aside. Whereas if the producer and the consumer can just talk one-on-one, I think a lot more gets accomplished. And, it's a lot of times at the club when I serve food, it might be like with fresh fish or something. But then all of a sudden the members will say, oh, those green beans are great. Where'd you get those? and they remind them of their grandparents or picking from a garden. And, you get food, I think, is kind of funny that way. It really can transport people back. And it's been fun to see that evolution as it's, really, I see it almost as a pendulum. I think we kind of swung out to one direction, and now it's kind of coming back
the other way. Yeah, absolutely. We were talking about that the other day on the program, as a matter of fact, with David Knutson. Let me give our listeners a chance to join in, because I don't think I gave the number, so I'll give it right now. If you'd like to join in as we talk with our three guests today about, we can talk about raising sheep, we can talk about wool, and we can talk about cooking with lamb. With our three guests, call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. What's a sheep's diet, by the way? What does a sheep eat?
And grass.
Grass. Claire, is that, Ray says grass, is that pretty much it?
That's the majority of it. Sometimes they do get a little grain in the winter before they're lambing or when they're milking, but sheep have evolved to consume forage. Yep.
And
that's our main feedstuff.
That's your main feedstuff.
Right.
Well, I tell you what, is that inexpensive feedstuff or is it expensive feedstuff?
Well, there's some expenses there, but pardon?
It depends where you live and whether you have it available on your farm.
Yeah, I suppose that's the case. I wondered if there were supplements or other things that are fed to them along the way, but it's mostly grass.
Yes.
Well, I would add to that and say that there certainly are requirements for protein. So it's important if you're buying feed or even growing your own feed to test your hay. Not all grass is equal. Some of it has some legume in it, adds some protein, and so I think it's really important for producers to test the feeds that they're feeding. But for the most part, a dry ewe that's not producing milk and is not gestating, she's not carrying lambs, has a pretty low requirement for protein, so she can survive on a pretty medium quality hay. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's take a call. Bill from Tennessee was driving through. We'll go to, let's go to Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm from the South and am kind of work up in the North and have tried some lamb chops and really like them, but I'm used to being raised on beef, so I'm not real sure. When they asked me how to order it, I'd normally order my steaks and beef like medium to medium rare. And if I'm ordering medium lamb, is that cooked good enough, or does it need to be a well-cooked meat? Or I don't really know. I just
all right. That's a good question, and we'll get to the answer to that question in just a minute or two as we visit with our three guests, Ray Antonovich, Jack Kestner, and Claire Michelet Eunice. I'm sorry, Claire. They're with us till 12:30 on the Ideas Network. Talking today about raising sheep. We're talking about the wonders of wool. We're talking about cooking with lamb today. Larry Mueller here with my three guests, Ray Antonovich of AZ Farm of Oregon, Wisconsin, Jack Kestner, who is executive chef of the Oconomowoc Lake Club, and Claire Michelet Eunice, who is a UW Extension animal scientist, works with UW Extension and in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences on the UW-Madison campus. So great to have all three of them with us so we can talk about quite a variety of things here, everything from eating lamb and preparing lamb to raising sheep, wool production. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Ted in Belleville, Illinois. Ted, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you? Ted from Belleville. Grew up in Wisconsin. Spent half my adult life so far in Europe. Owned a country cottage there. And we recently updated it. It's built in about the 1600s. And we thought that we'd share an application we used recently when we did that. We put clay tile roof on. Been on there 100 years, and we put a new set of those on. But on the inside of the attic, our roofer asked us if what we wanted to do in terms of insulation. He said what's used now is compressed felt wool sheets about 2 plus inches thick, and that was placed on the inside of the attic for insulation. Cools things in the summer and warms things in the winter, and it's turned our attic space, which is the pitch is quite high, so you can stand in it in this old place. And I was wondering if that has migrated to the States yet. I know that it's become quite popular. It was, I believe, produced in either Switzerland or Austria, but it's in vogue now. As a very healthy means to both insulate and cool in very practical terms.
So this is a sheet? Run that by me once more. It's somehow compressed wool?
Yeah, it's compressed wool. It's wool felt. It's about 2.5 inches thick.
Okay.
And it's in sheets roughly the size of a sheet of plywood, relatively easy to cut. And we place that on the west, to the west side of the home, where the sun hits the hardest onto the clay tile, which is used pretty often in these cottages,
yeah,
over there. But very, very effective, certainly environmentally conscious. We are delighted with its effects as well. We use the upper attic for our grandchildren when they visit, and they can play because we put a natural tongue and groove pine wood floor in there, and fairly rustic environment. So,
well, I tell you what, I'm going to break in here because it's a good question, and I don't know. Ray, let's turn to you first, and maybe Claire, comment?
We don't have anything that extensive that I'm aware of, but we could
sounds
be working
great.
On it.
Claire,
yes.
Do you know?
I think there are products available in the United States, but they're not made in the United States, so they'd have to be imported products. But I have heard about using wool bats for insulation, and certainly, you know, we use them all the time, and in the winter our winter blankets and things like that. So wool is an amazing insulator.
Yes,
absolutely. And so we may be, who knows, we may be seeing more of it. If of course, I guess we have more sheep in Europe than we have here. Is there more?
Claire? I would think so.
Yep, the numbers of sheep in the United States have declined over the last 50-100 years, and there certainly are more sheep in Europe, and you know, Australia, New Zealand far outnumber the United States, and so processing those products is probably a lot easier.
But our demand for lamb here and related products is increasing, mm-hmm. and so it's a good future as far as the industries.
Well, thanks again, Ted, for calling. I appreciate it very much. Some new information there. And, Jack, you wanted to add something.
I think there was a previous caller wanted to know about temperatures of...
Oh, you know, here I am. I forgot completely about that, and I'm really glad that you brought that back up, Jack. And, of course, the chef would be the guy to remember the question. We had a caller earlier, and I hope he's still listening, who wondered about ordering lamb chops in a restaurant, or just maybe a lamb in general. When you do you order it, you know, he said he orders his steaks like a medium or a medium rare. What do you do with the lamb chops?
I recommend eat them the same. So if you have your beef medium rare, you know, order your lamb medium rare, and that goes for the chops. Or even if you do a roast leg of lamb, if you want to cook it to about, usually I cook mine about 125 degrees and then let it rest, and it usually kind of drifts up to the low 130s, and that's medium rare.
Okay.
So really, rule of thumb is just how you eat your beef, just same with the lamb.
Okay, there you go. And what about, as long as we're at it, before we get to Marcia, hang on there, Marcia, for a minute. What about special preparation? Or do you cook it the same as you'd prepare, say, a beefsteak?
Depending on how much fat there is, usually I cook it a little bit softer, a little bit lower heat.
Okay.
Not quite direct heat, a little bit more off.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually if I braise something, I braise like around 300 degrees with lamb, I usually go like 275.
Okay. So a little bit less.
Yep.
All right. All right. Now let's go to Marcia in Piney, Michigan. Hi, Marcia. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'd like to direct my question to Claire. I really appreciate you three. And I have a question. I raise Hampshires. We have a fairly short grass growing season up here. And I'm wondering, I had been told that very possibly grass or hay for my hams might not be adequate for nutrition.
Okay.
Well, for maintenance, as long as they're consuming enough, it should be adequate for use. Unless you have animals that you're growing or trying to finish, then you'll need something.
Right.
You'll need some extra energy and some extra protein. But if you have dry ewes, as long as they can consume the dry matter, a good quality grass hay, maybe 14% mm-hmm. protein would be sufficient. You know, hams are a large frame animal, and when we think about intake in a sheep, it could be between maybe 3 to 3.5% of its body weight. So you can do that calculation. If you have a scale and you can weigh your ewes, calculate what 3 to 3.5% of their body weight would be, and just keep an eye on how much hay they're able to consume. Sometimes with lower quality feed, it might be lots of stalks, or they're just choosing not to eat it. So some things you might be able to do, if you're able to grind your feed into smaller pieces, they'll eat more. And if they're just not able to consume the amount of dry matter they need, you might need to supplement something. But for dry ewes that aren't gestating and aren't lactating, a decent quality hay should be sufficient.
And what would a ewe in that condition, roughly, what would the average ewe weigh?
Well, it varies widely across breeds.
Right.
But I'm not sure if the caller's still on, but a hamp ewe might weigh 175 pounds.
Okay.
They're pretty large-framed animals.
So it's got to be eating 3%, 5 pounds? Is that about right?
Mm-hmm. And that's dry matter. So if you're
it's
feeding
a lot
it,
of dry matter.
If you're thinking about an animal on pasture is about 80% water. So they need to consume lots of pasture to get that dry matter. But if we're thinking about hay, it might be only 10% water. So 5 pounds, you might need to feed them 6 pounds of hay to get that 5 pounds of dry matter.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. One other question. Is it okay to use grass, fresh grass that has been pulverized as much as it would be by a lawnmower?
If it's fed quickly, yes. That's one idea of green chopping is to go out and chop that forage. And actually, I think it's a good idea for animals who want to have fresh, you want them to have fresh forage, to do something like that, to chop the feed and feed it to them, because one of the challenges of grazing animals is often intake on pasture. They just don't have enough time in the day to consume as much as they need. And so I think that is a good idea, but you want to make sure that it's pretty fresh feed. So
right.
I wouldn't keep it a day and then feed it the next day. I would definitely feed it the day that you cut it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling, Marcia. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Keith in Appleton next. Keith, hello to you.
Oh, hello. Two questions, really. First one is the enzymatic makeup of sheep and goat milk sufficiently different from cow's milk that lactose intolerant people to cow's milk could possibly drink sheep or goat's milk unaffected? And secondly, completely unrelated, how is lanolin produced, and does this comprise a profitable area for sheep raisers in Wisconsin?
Okay. Claire, I'll start with you.
I'll take the first question. There's kind of two issues that you're raising. One is lactose, which is a sugar that's found in milk, and it's found in all milk. It's found in sheep and goat and cow milk. And so if there's a lactose intolerance, drinking any of those milks is not good for people with lactose intolerance. There's a separate issue of a milk allergy, and those allergies can be due to allergies to proteins. And there are different proteins in sheep's milk and cow's milk and goat's milk. So, for example, someone with an allergy to cow milk may be able to drink goat milk. And that's the same with sheep milk. Someone allergic to cow milk may be able to drink sheep milk.
And other than just experimenting, is there a way to know through testing from a doctor's test whether or not you might be tolerable to one over another? Is this something that you just have to do on your own and suffer whatever results?
Suffer the consequences. I don't know. They can certainly test for all kinds of allergies, and usually skin tests. And I've had allergists on the show, and we've never talked about milk in terms of lactose. But I
love goat cheese, and I love sheep milk. And I've got friends who are lactose intolerant, and one of them claims that she can drink sheep milk with no ill effect.
Well, then I would. I might suggest that is not a lactose intolerance, because actually sheep milk has more lactose in it than cow's milk.
Maybe an allergy, though.
But it could be. It could certainly be an allergy. And I know of the reverse. I know of people who drink cow's milk. They're not lactose intolerant. They eat cow cheese, but they're allergic to sheep cheese because there's different proteins in sheep cheese. So in sheep's milk. So I'm not sure if a skin test will tell you a specific allergy to that protein. I'm not sure, but just to recognize that difference. Lactose is the sugar that's in all milks, and the proteins are really separate between the different types of milks.
And then in terms of lanolin, this may or may not be a question you guys can answer. Our caller Keith was wondering, how was lanolin produced, and could it be a source of income for sheep producers?
Well, lanolin is kind of like the sweat of the sheep, and it's produced at the base of the follicles of wool. And it is when the sheep are shorn that lanolin is harvested in the wool, and it's removed from the wool. And so it does take a process to remove that lanolin from the wool. And so, commercial mills are able to do that on a larger scale. I'm not exactly sure what the treatments are involved in processing that wool, but there are a number of woolen mills in Wisconsin that are able to process wool. So that might be a place to ask, maybe at one of the local wool mills who handle those fibers every day and and find out.
Because it seems like lanolin is in just about every topical skin application on the market. So
I
figured there must be a demand for it. Somebody's making money off of it.
Somebody
That's
is.
That's true. But it's probably the people who are handling lots of wool and have a lot of the chemical treatments available to kind of purify that lanolin from the wool.
Yep, there you go. Thanks a lot, Keith, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Barbara in Milwaukee next. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I have two questions. I'm ignorant about distinguishing different flavors of cheese, and I was hoping your guests could characterize differences in taste and feel of sheep and milk and maybe even goat, and also the nutritional differences, if they are remarkable or not, between those in form of milk.
Yeah, okay. Jack, you want to start with you, and then we'll go to Claire, maybe?
Sure. I think people are more familiar with sheep cheese than they realize. Some of the more common sheep cheese, is there's a lot of feta cheeses that are sheep milk cheese. Manchego, Roquefort actually is a blue cheese from France, which is a sheep's milk cheese. And I don't really notice. To me, there's almost like maybe a little bit of a cleaner flavor when I taste the sheep's milk cheese. But it can really range from very bland to very strong flavored. So
you're not seeing really a lot of difference, but maybe a little cleaner taste. Well, what about Claire? Do you know anything about the nutritional value of it?
Well, if we're just talking about milk, sheep's milk has higher fat and protein than cow's milk. So we think of a whole cow milk maybe having 4% fat. Sheep's milk will have 6 to 7% fat. So if you were to drink a cup of sheep's milk, it would be very rich. And that's part of the reason that people don't just drink sheep milk. It's also higher in protein. And so when you make a cheese, you're essentially capturing that fat and protein in the cheese. And so the yield of cheese is higher from sheep's milk than it is from both cow and goat milk. From a nutritional point of view, sheep's milk itself does have higher calcium. It has higher vitamin E and vitamin C compared to cow's milk. So that's just looking at the milks. And I will just put a plug in for the Sheep and Wool Festival coming up this weekend on Sunday. Jack, as we've talked about, is going to be doing a lamb cooking demo. He's also going to highlight some sheep milk cheeses in that cooking. Mm-hmm. And then following that cooking demo at 2 o'clock, we're going to have a cheese tasting. So we're going to bring in probably 6 or 7 cheeses that are sheep milk or mixed milk cheeses made in Wisconsin. And the general public can get to try some of those cheeses, which I think is a great opportunity because often, you know, the cheeses aren't available everywhere in the state, and they're also not cheap cheeses. So I think it's a neat opportunity to just to get some in your mouth and find out the flavor. Because when people ask me about the flavor of sheep milk, you know, just like cow's milk, it can be processed using lots of different cultures and methods, and it can have a range of flavors from a blue to a soft cheese. But there is what I like to think of as kind of a lanolin-y type quality to that milk that you can kind of taste the essence of a sheep. So if you like how clean sheep smell, then I think you'll like sheep too.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you very much. And let's go back to the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival. I'm glad you brought it back up again, Claire, because there is a lot to see, not only for the sheep producer, but the consumers. This is a great opportunity for consumers, Ray.
Yes, it is. With the vendors that we do have again this year, there's 133 vendors as of today, and I think everything is filled. That's kind of a limiting factor is the facilities. But there are a lot of things there. It can be very educational as to how wool is used in the different products there. And then we also do have a little entertainment related to it also with some of the features this year. not only the spinners, but getting into a little bit of the antique aspects in a couple different ways. But just going around and seeing the different sheep and different breeds, there are differences, and can be quite significant compared to the different breeds.
And one of the other fun things, I think, is there's a stock dog trial.
Yes.
And so people can come out and see dogs working sheep.
Right. That is going on all 3 days. It is full as far as entries. We cannot accept anymore. And then for the person who might own a stock dog, there's going to be kind of you can test your dog as far as any real interest in working stock. That is another feature that you might see. How does a different dog, that you might be familiar with, how that reacts to sheep, mm-hmm. and then compare that with a dog you might have. And if you have one that might get interested in using it with the stock, or rather than just the grandchildren or ducks, something like that, you can really learn something there.
Yep.
And I want to go back to Jack for a minute. You're going to be doing some cooking demonstrations, as Claire was saying. What are you going to be cooking?
And I think the last caller is calling from Milwaukee. And Jefferson is only about an hour drive out of Milwaukee, and I think it's a great afternoon drive. So this year we'll be doing a favorite from last year, which was a lamb ragu, which is from the shoulder. I think the shoulder is actually a real flavorful cut of meat, but I don't know if people are real comfortable cooking it. And I think that's just part of local food is, you know, I think people are getting more interested in cooking, and then mm-hmm. it's like, how do you cook?
mm-hmm.
So I always gear the demonstrations towards that, you know, let's take people back to the basics. And anyone can braise if you can just put it in the oven at 300 degrees or 275 and for a couple hours. So we'll do the lamb ragu. And that has a little bit of white wine, red wine, rosemary, garlic in it. And then we'll be doing lamb meatballs. And as Claire said, we'll be topping that with a little bit of the probably Marissa cheese from Carvalho,
mm-hmm.
which is a nice grating cheese, and a roast leg of lamb with a blue cheese from Hidden Springs. And those will all be sampling those three.
And that's on Sunday?
Sunday at 12:30.
And what does it cost to come to the fair?
It is $5 a person, and then you can come a couple of days. You don't have to.
For $5 is.
Right. entertainment, education, see something a little bit different, too.
And
life is changing, and I think we need to look at some things a little bit different.
Well, I tell you what, and is there, so it's the September 10th through the 12th at the Jefferson Fair Park in Jefferson, Wisconsin.
Right.
And online, is there a place to go online?
On the backside, there's a website.
Oh, there's a, go to WisconsinSheepAndWoolFestival.com, and you'll learn more about it. Ray, Jack, Claire, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Ray Antonovich, Jack Hessner, and Claire Mikulay-Yunus, our guests today as we talked about, the wonders of sheep, wool, and cooking with lamb. And don't forget that Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival. All three of them will be there, and I hope you have a chance to get there as well. Coming up, just to take a look tomorrow quickly, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner, our guests to talk home renovation and repair. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.